This is tape one, side two. So some of these people that you met in the Navy then had, you were later dealing with in government?
No, not necessarily.
Oh.
Those people were ranking officers, very senior officers, and became, as they say, leaders in the Navy organization in Washington, D.C. and other places. But I was able to deal with effectively with the Navy at Whidbey Island because of my Navy background. And we had to deal with the people at Whidbey Island because they control the bombing range.
How do you account for your rising so quickly through the ranks? It seems like you advanced very, very quickly.
Well, I did advance quite rapidly, and I think a lot of it was because I got in early and had almost a year prior to the start of the war, and got well acquainted with Navy routine, and I learned fairly rapidly, you know, became officer of the deck and executive officer of the ship, and so I think that seagoing experience, the first 3 years, you know, most Navy people really look forward to that seagoing experience, helps them in their future. And the fact that I got to go to that staff college, I don't know how that happened, but it happened. And then the service with the Commander-in-Chief was just outstanding.
Is there any relationship between the planning that you were involved with in the Navy and then your ability to plan in state government?
Only the logic of the military planning is done in very logical steps. The state planning was really a little different. State planning really was the development or the attempt to get the various state departments to develop their goals and get those related to appropriations and so forth. That was the direction of our state planning, which, you know, it wasn't 1, 2, 3 like you do in military, but there's some relationship. There's some logic in both types of planning.
So from the Navy then, where did you go?
Well, I got out of the Navy in 55 because they wouldn't, what was the reason? Well, I was just tired of being separated from the family. That was the primary reason. And so I decided to come back to law school. I did. I came back to Willamette, and my family was living in Salem, and we'd purchased a house there. So I went the spring term, from February to May or June, and it was during that time I got acquainted with the people at the Oregon Railroad Association, and by the time I was through that first or that term of law school, I was offered a job as assistant manager of the Railroad Association. Well, that meant moving to Portland and discontinuing the law school, at least for a while. But it was then that I got much better acquainted with Mark. He was then in the Senate.
In 1955.
Yes.
Yeah. That's when he began his first term in the Oregon Senate.
Then in 56 he was He was elected Secretary of State. He beat Monroe Sweetland, as I recall. As a matter of fact, I may have been involved a little bit in his campaign at that time, but it was a year or so later when I got really involved with him by, I think I mentioned this to you earlier, that I developed some graphs that showed a whole series of elections for governor and so forth for back of 30, 40 years. And the off-presidential year was a good time for Republicans. So I was able to convince, or to help convince him, I guess, to make the run for governor in 58.
Now, your position in the Railroad Association was what?
Well, I was assistant manager, which was just, I was just a lobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
But I developed an acquaintanceship throughout the state that way. I traveled a great deal. The way we lobbied was to get acquainted with every member of the legislature and their families.
Mm-hmm.
Got to know them, you know, we're on a first name basis with every member and with some of their friends in their hometown. So that was a very effective way to lobby.
So what was your impression of Hatfield then as a legislator?
Well, you recall, there was only about a year there. See, in 56 he ran for Secretary of State. I went to work for the railroads right after the 55 session.
Okay.
So for the 57 session, he was Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I had very little to do with him as a lobbyist in the legislature.
So what was your impression of him then as Secretary of State?
Oh, well, it developed a started developing admiration for the guy and the way he handled himself and his sense of humor and so forth. It was just developed a real friendship.
Could you describe in any way specifically how he handled himself? How he came across to people there in Salem, to you, to the people around him? What were things that
well,
struck you most?
Well, he impressed me as the man who knew what he was doing and knew how to go about handling the job as,
mm-hmm.
as a politician, as Secretary of State. He seemed to have the right words to say at all the important occasions, and he didn't seem to develop any controversies. As Secretary of State, he just handled himself very well, and you started to, or at least I did, I started to learn to respect him a great deal and his ability. That was just the beginning of the great respect I developed for him over the years.
During that time when he was in the legislature and then as Secretary of State, do you recall who was in Hatfield's circle of friends and advisors while he was?
Well, Warren Nunn was
there,
and Travis were close to him. I guess Freeman was. I don't know whether Freeman Homer, when he was Secretary of State, don't know that Freeman had. I don't know what relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Travis and he were acquainted from Stanford days.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how he and Warren got acquainted. I think Warren was in the motor vehicle division when Earl Snell was governor. I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was it. And I suppose they got acquainted then when Mark became Secretary of State. Motor vehicle division was, I think, part of the Secretary of State's operation in those days.
It was about this time, too, I believe it was in 1957, when you organized the Capitol Club for the lobbyists.
Oh, yes. That was our first session, yes. And was it 58? guess it was late in the 57 session, I think it was. In those days, it was quite common for the legislators to take trips to Tillamook or to Sweet Hall or somewhere where the Chambers of Commerce would put on a deal for them. And they'd invite the lobbyists along. The lobbyists would be there to serve them their drinks and, to entertain them. And I don't know, I took several of those bus trips with them, it'd be 30 or 40, and I'd wind up being a bartender, primarily. The lobbyists were looked to provide the funds for some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
It was to the point where only maybe 6 or 8 of the lobbyists were getting stuck for a portion of the expenses. So it seemed to make sense to.
Were you one of those?
Oh, I was one that got stuck. Yeah, the railroad people got stuck quite often, and the power company people and others, and so I don't know who it was I worked with. Probably the power company lobbyist anyway, with the idea of developing a club where everybody would make a contribution based primarily on the amount of interest they had in the legislature, and set up this pool, and from that pool to take care of the expenses that were requested by the members of the legislature, and it worked out quite well. It's still functioning, as a matter of fact.
In the same way, in the same capacity.
Yeah, I think so. I think they did the same thing.
What other leading figures in the state and in state government were you in contact with then?
Well, in those days?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, everybody, yeah. I mean, all the legislators. Who was the governor? Well, 57 was Bob Holmes was governor. Administrative assistant happened to be an old Navy buddy of mine.
Oh, so here we go back to the Navy again.
Yeah, he was, we were together at the University of Washington. We were both teaching up there. When he settled in Astoria, and he was a friend of Bob Holmes, and Bob brought him in as administrative assistant. So. But, it was those days that I got thoroughly acquainted with so many members, with all the members of the legislature. Quite a few of the administrators of the various state and my law school acquaintances, were scattered around the state. I could call on them as I was, and several of them ran for, or they would run for various political offices, maybe county commissioners or judges or something. But, I'd call on them on my trips around the state. I developed a sort of a network of friends throughout the state.
What do you recall of Hatfield's run for the governorship, and in the primary and in the general election?
I don't recall so much. Oh yeah, I do recall something about the primary. He ran against Sig Unander, and of course I'd known Sig Unander from lobbying efforts. So. And of course, having been involved in encouraging him to run, encouraging Mark to run, I probably, I don't know whether Sig knew I was directly involved or not. I really don't know. Sig was drinking heavily in those days, and especially after his defeat, he drank very heavily. It was result of his demise, really. So I'm told.
So that defeat was a particularly discouraging part of his career.
For Unander, you bet. Was. And of course, Mark then won the governorship by a fairly good margin.
Were you involved at all in either the primary or the general election campaigning that you recall?
No, I don't think I don't think that was. I know in the subsequent election, I helped develop strategy and would go to regular meetings, you know. But I don't think I was that closely involved in 58. I went through the 59 session. Of course, the Mark's first term as governor, and had a lot of contact then with Warren and Mark too, as far as, but as a lobbyist for those. Then in December of 59, I quit the railroads and took the job as the assistant director of planning and development.
How did that come about?
Well, the director at that time was a fellow by the name of Julius Jensen. And he was aware of the fact that I had a lot of friends in the legislature. And I suppose that had some effect. And I didn't realize it at the time, but his position was in jeopardy because he was fired, right? Within he was released. I don't know. I suppose it was fired.
For what reason?
Well, I don't think it was fired. Political. Mm-hmm. You know, he was Holmes' man.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know his position was in jeopardy when he offered me this job. Or I guess maybe I might not have been so willing to take it. But it developed that successor was a fellow by the name of Bob Tarr, and Bob Tarr was in reserve naval officer attending sessions down at Swan Island, and I was attending sessions down there, and we were together in classes there, and he wanted to keep me then as his assistant director, so that worked out fine.
Back to the Navy.
Back to the Navy. But Bob was developed into a controversial person, and he just lasted 1 year.
But he was appointed by?
He was appointed by Hatfield.
By Hatfield. Mm-hmm. And what controversy then led to his demise?
Well, he was a pretty... pretty aggressive sort of guy, and he would do some things without clearing with the governor's office, and on a couple of three occasions it was a potential source of embarrassment. I can't recall the specific incidents, but I remember they were really hot under the collar about some of the things that he had done when they decided to let him go. It was a very touchy situation for me because Jerry, you know, was chairman of the advisory committee, and Jerry would call me down to Salem, and on this particular occasion, want to know if I would like to be head of the department. And I, when I got back to the office in Portland, Tar wanted to know what the heck I was doing in Salem or what Jerry wanted. Well, that was a tough...
A very awkward situation.
Very awkward. I said, you're in trouble, Todd. And he hit the overhead. Oh, he got so mad at me, he thought I was subverting him. And called a couple of his friends on the advisory committee. But it worked out.
At this point, your rapport with Hatfield and his staff was fairly strong?
Yeah, it was. It was developing very strongly. You know, I was the sort of the prime mover behind the Boardman project. See, that came up right about the time I joined the right after I joined the staff. And we had a lot of dealings with the legislature. We had to get but my relationship with the legislature was excellent, so we had no problem there. And then my relationship with Mark and with Jerry and all improved as we went along.
How would you say that the setting up of Hatfield's administration and the staff generally received by the public and by other politicians and people in the state government? When he set up his government originally, after he came into office?
Well, I think they felt he was proceeding logically, and that he had a plan. It took him a couple of years, I think, to get some of the things he wanted. For instance, Department of Commerce, he wanted to merge some of the agencies, and I believe a Department of Natural Resources were two of the agencies he wanted. But it took him a couple of years to do that. And there's always some resistance, you know, from people who are entrenched in positions and don't like to give them up.
Resistance to change.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps a job in jeopardy or two. I had no reason to resist their proposal to make the Department of Planning and Development a division of the Department of Commerce. That didn't bother me at all, because the director of the Department of Commerce was Hillman Ludeman, who was just a peach of a guy. And we just really had a fine relationship. And so it didn't make any difference as far as my activities were concerned with the department.
So how did he go about then setting up that department? What was his process?
Well, it was just a matter of bringing the corporation, the insurance, planning and development, and some of the licensing boards all under one control, and he would hold weekly staff meetings to keep the thing rolling smoothly, and he would then report to Warren or to the governor on problems that developed in the various divisions. But I, you know, it was a regular weekly staff meeting I'd go to, and that's the way he kept things going.
Maybe you could tell me just a bit about the advisory committee that you mentioned.
Oh, well, Jerry, of course, was the chairman, and he had, I guess, six or eight, or maybe more, members. They were important businessmen. Ira Keller, the head of Western Craft. Bill Stevenson, he was head of First, now Interstate, Bank. It was First National in those days. Tom Santos, head of Bumblebee down at Astoria. Herman Justina of the Justina Lumber Company in Eugene. Let's see.
So how was the committee set up then to work? What was its function?
Well, the advisory committee was just that. I would, at the regular meetings, which were maybe held once a quarter or something like that, I'd give them a report on what was going on in the department. If there was if I had questions about how we should proceed, usually I'd have that all ironed out with Jerry beforehand. Jerry would conduct the meetings. He was chairman of the committee, and he would ask them for their comments, the members, or then he would ask me to report, and then he would ask them for their comments about any of the aspects of our operation, and they had comments, and we'd, of course, make the notes. And
was Hatfield in attendance of any of these?
He would occasionally attend, but not too often.
And when he attended, would he participate, or would he be observing more?
Mostly observing.
So would most of what happened in these meetings then go through or to Jerry, Frank, and then on to Hatfield from there?
Yeah. You know, they've always had a close relationship, so Jerry would keep him posted. The more routine stuff, day-to-day kind of stuff, I'd keep Warren Nunn posted.
Mm-hmm.
So he could keep Mark posted.
Mm-hmm.
I probably went to Salem, I suppose, once or twice a week, almost all the time I was director.
Were the meetings conducted in a formal way or informal way?
The advisory committee meetings were rather formal.
Mm-hmm.
And minutes were kept. And
Do you have a sense that other people's ideas that they were coming to present to the meeting were also sorted out ahead of time with Jerry Frank, or were there some spontaneous moments during these meetings?
Well, Clark, if you were to ask me some specific items, I couldn't give them to you. But I'm sure that there were some suggestions made or ideas presented that didn't come from our staff or from me, but I can't tell you what they might have been.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind now that for the first about 3 years of my directorship, I was intimately involved in trying to bring that Boardman thing to a head, and so a lot of our meetings were just keeping them posted on what our problems and achievements were in connection with Boardman.
Yeah, yeah. What was your relationship like then with Hatfield's staff?
Oh, it was couldn't ask for a better relationship because I had the confidence of Warren Nunn and the governor.
Mm-hmm. Were there other people on his staff that you dealt with on a regular basis?
Well, as far as the Boardman project, yeah. State Land Board, I had to deal through them. That meant dealing with the treasurer and the secretary of state.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother happened to be administrative assistant to Hal Appling, who was secretary of state. And so,
well, describe for me that relationship, not only with you with him and while he was and maybe you could describe for me also his relationship with Governor Hatfield's relationship with Appling and how this all worked.
Well, of course, Appling was very much involved in Hatfield's run for governor the first and second time both. Probably raised a lot of money for him. I don't know that to be a fact, but I'm pretty sure he helped to organize, I know, the campaign. And so when Mark became governor, I immediately appointed Appling to take the secretary's job. Well, Appling then hired Dale as his administrative assistant. But you see, Appling and Mark and Howard Belton, who was the state treasurer, made up the land board. And the land board had to take action on all this land exchange and so forth we were doing to put the Boardman project together.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the task of keeping those other two officials fully informed on what was going on with the Boardman project also.
What was the decision-making process like within the administration? How did things get done? How was Hatfield involved in day-to-day decisions and...
Well, I suppose it can be better answered by Warren.
Mm-hmm. Maybe in terms of your department then. How involved was he in what went on in your department?
Just a matter of keeping him posted on what was going on in our department primarily. And he didn't order me to do anything in particular. It was just a matter of making sure he was kept praised of what we were doing. And we had two or three ways of doing that. I had a man on the staff who would put out a regular monthly report called Grow with Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And that would keep all the agencies and other people concerned advised on the progress we were making in economic development. And it was a pretty good record as far as that. As a matter of fact, I think Hatfield was elected to the Senate primarily on the basis of his economic development. Well, I wouldn't say primarily, but that was an important factor in his